This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're here for the next in our series of draft countdown shows. Tonight, we're going to talk about the tight end group, and it is a wide open group for starters. A lot of interest, I think, in terms of what the Ravens may do on draft day surrounds what they might do at tight end. And here to join me to talk about that is Alec Poulianos. Alec, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Always excited to talk about the tight ends with you. I think I've been doing it now for like 3 or 4 years. I was looking back at my notes, done it a couple times.
Got to mix that up. So yeah, I think Ostreicher's had the safeties a couple years in a row at least. And
I like it though. It's my favorite. Yeah, everyone jokes okay. That I like scouting tight ends too much. So
All right. Well, it is a lot of fun. And you know, the Ravens situation, I think, is front and center in this draft. The Ravens situation specifically at tight end. If we're looking at what happened, there's talk of all offseason about Mark Andrews, starting with the disappointment and the reaction to what had happened in Buffalo. And then all during the offseason with comments made by DaCosta and Harbaugh, originally it almost sounded like a eulogy or a goodbye to him. And then more recently at the league meetings and after his bonus for this year has been paid, there's a roster bonus of $4 million he got, which reduces the possible cap savings to the Ravens from $11 million to $7 million. That's the significance of that. After that was paid, you know, basically Harbaugh has been saying Mark, very excited to have Mark Andrews this year, blah 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 blah, and acting as if everything is business as usual going forward. All three of the Ravens' primary tight ends, and I'm not including Patrick Ricard in there, although he's part of the logjam, no doubt about it, but all three of their primary tight ends are in the last year of their contract. Tell me some reasons why that's a good thing, or tell me all the reasons why it's a bad thing.
I mean, I think it's mostly just a bad thing. Somebody needs to be kept. You could even argue maybe two people need to be kept. But I feel like something has to give. I would be really sad if we went into this season with all three of them on the final year of their contract with no extension given to somebody. And yeah, I mean, I can't imagine a world where the whole room turns over in 1 year. And therefore, I imagine somebody's going to get a contract. And I'm just curious how the sequencing will be done.
Right. That's how I feel about it too. Is it possible if you had to look at the possibilities of just using Andrews and Likely for starters, because I think they're the two most important. They're clearly the two most important in terms of the money involved. If you were to assign a probability of 2, 1, or 0 still being with the Ravens in 2026, what percentage would you give to each of those outcomes? Two, both being there, one exactly being there, and neither of them being there.
Probably 2 would be 10%, 1 would be 80%, and then 0 would be 10%.
Okay, I'm right there with you. 10, 85, and 5, I said, for 2, 1, and 0. I don't think it's completely impossible. They couldn't basically work through Lamar to get them both signed somehow. Getting Lamar an extension is going to clear up a lot of room, and maybe that Lamar feels like, okay, the time's right for an extension. Then it's going to happen anyway. Might as well to be to save my two tight ends. Last time around is the big prize that Lamar got out of it personally was Odell Beckham for 1 year. So I think it's reasonable that it might be coupled up with something like that, that they get an extension for both players. I'm not sure it really makes a lot of sense for the Ravens by any other means. I think the most likely or the healthiest way that the Ravens can handle this is extend one, play with one, and trade one. And the reason I really favor trading one and why this keeps coming up, and it's like, something I'm not going to let go of, is that the Ravens really cannot draft a tight end as they're standing now. They don't have a roster spot literally to give to a tight end.
Right. Yeah, they don't. And I think all are tradable, with Likely being the least interesting to trade because I just really want to keep him around. But I could see a scenario where, there's a tight end we covet in the 5th round. Somebody isn't too giddy to draft in the 5th round. We give him Kohler and a 6, and we get that pick. I think it's an overpay. I think Kohler's better than that. But given the fact that he has nothing after this year, maybe it's not that big of an overpay because you get to reset and get a tight end that you like.
Yeah, you get the key thing is the reset, and that's where most fans just don't think in this dimension. But you have players – if the players you want, you have the roster you want, but it's not just for this year. It's for the rest of their contract, and it's at the given price as well. And if you can't really get your arms around that, then you can't do what's necessary to go through the roster construction logic. And you've just done it there. You've said, they needed if they've got 1 year of Charlie Kohler, so maybe Charlie Kohler plus a 6 is worth a 5. It actually does sound a little light to me too, but it would be something that might not be completely unreasonable.
I think Kohler would line up as tight end 7 or 8 in this list right now. So like, that's kind of why I'm like, if I could reset and get tight end 7 or 8, I'd be happy.
I'm looking at the guys who are 6, 7, 8, 9 on the list, 10. I think I'd pretty much take the rest of, the first 4 years of their contract over the last year of Kohler's contract, no question about it, in terms of that. So we'll get to those guys. A trade is still possible on draft day. I think we'd agree. You just mentioned, one possibility. It might not be the trade you want. And there's things going on behind the scene. It doesn't matter what I suggest. It literally does not matter to the Baltimore Ravens. They don't give a crap. But it does matter what the current contract situation, the current contract negotiations are with Isaiah Likely in terms of a potential extension. And if Likely and his agent are so far off from the Ravens that they can't see a way to make a deal, then Likely might be the one who gets traded. Similarly, they probably have discussions going on with Andrews about an extension, and it may be a contingent extension that says, hey, sign us, tell us right now what it would take to get you for, another 3 years, say, and the Ravens will, and he may agree on a number. And then, the agreement will be after the draft, they'll sign that contract if nothing else changes, kind of thing. Of course, once you have the draft, something has kind of already changed, whether they draft a tight end or even if they don't. But the paralysis at tight end is probably the Ravens' most significant draft weakness that I can see. They don't have a tremendous position of need like most other teams do, that they need one position. The Ravens have a very balanced set of needs. They got the left tackle situation figured out, but they still need backup tackles. They need interior linemen. They need a second inside linebacker. They need cornerbacks who are younger. They certainly need safeties. They probably will always want to have a developmental wide receiver coming through the system. I think they'll have one there. It's very balanced possible draft open for the Ravens. They leave some very open for BPA value picks. Mm-hmm. But this to me, the logjam at tight end is just an enormous weakness.
You're right. I just ran through all the position groups in my head, and there's fungibility at the end of the roster for every single one of them except for tight end. Right now,
maybe,
tight end.
Maybe quarterback, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't imagine them carrying three on the active roster because of the new practice squad rule for the call-up. So I would definitely feel like whatever quarterback they would draft, they would hope to hide on the practice squad, similar to Leary. But yeah, I think that they have the option to draft everything except for tight end, like you said.
All right. Then the way that the Ravens would get a tight end, either in this draft or in the UDFA process afterwards, would be to basically pick one either in a very late round, six or seven, somebody who's almost certainly headed to the practice squad, unless the Ravens make an unprecedented move, carry four tight ends and sacrifice somewhere else, which is, that'd be hard. You want to sacrifice a wide receiver? You want to sacrifice a running back? You already have a fullback, so you're already kind of carrying an extra player from that perspective, so you can't really sacrifice a running back directly very easily. It just ends up being a very difficult puzzle to solve. And most of the special teams players, the ones who are good, are typically defensive players, so the pressure is always on a 26-24 split among the non-Wolfpack group.
Right.
So you have 53.
The wide receiver... Going down to five wide receivers is the only thing that I think would be plausible, but it wouldn't be great. And the reason I would say that is because of the market inefficiency that we're seeing still to this day with tight ends and wide receivers, where people are spending unbelievable, $12 million a year on what I would consider replacement level, wide receiver play, just because they fancy them. And if I could spend that exact same money on a solid tight end, which is basically what the case is, right? I'd rather have that player every day of the week, particularly in the changing NFL where defenses are lighter, and I think you can attack better with the tight end.
And we've just had 2 years of Lamar Jackson where he's totaled a 143.5 passer rating throwing to tight ends. We're going to talk about passer rating, by the way, for all of these tight ends in terms of what their guys have. I have some set metrics for each player we'll go over, but there isn't anybody close to that. In this draft, nobody's had that kind of success in 1 year. And Lamar Jackson is 30-1 touchdowns and interceptions these last 2 years throwing to tight ends. So definitely a situation where I understand how much of a strength it is at the position currently. It's a tremendous weakness to be ending the final year of the contract with everybody at the same time. It means you're either going to have to spend a ton of dollars at the end of this year, cap dollars, to try and re-sign two out of three and then draft one, or you're going to end up spending a ton of draft capital. You lose two guys and you have to spend two draft picks next year on tight ends, which I think is also fairly ludicrous. There's some significant value there. There is some overlap in terms of duplication, of the value overlap of the value, where I don't think they've gotten the full value out of either Andrews or Likely these last 2 years. They're both, are kind of limited target guys now. And it could be that if they just had one of them, they could do better. And hopefully they make the right call. And on draft day, they make a reset here to give themselves a leeway to draft a tight end at some point.
Yeah. Same thing with Kohler. Honestly, I mean, the kid's shown a lot of promise. They were able to run an offense when he was available that they had to abandon when he got hurt with the broken arm. He's good. And he got a lot of snaps this year. I mean, I think that was shown by how much he ate into the snap share of mostly, I would say, Mark Andrews, how much they believed in him. So I think both him and Likely got reduced value because of the situation with them drafting at the same time. Typically what we see with the Ravens is when they draft two tight ends, the second one's better, and they're actually usually astounding. but the in this particular case, while I think that still was obviously the case with Likely being better, I do think that Kohler was pretty good when he was available.
Mm-hmm. All right, outstanding. Well, I think we've covered the Ravens situation pretty well. Probably upset a lot of people with the notion that we're going to trade some strength here, because everybody hates that. Just everybody who says anything hates it. It's kind of like putting up a microphone in the village square with a little sign and a soapbox that says, "Is life fair?" question mark, and having, you know, what kind of people are going to jump on that soapbox and talk about it. So, all right.
We'll talk about, I think it would be cool to have the context of which tight end we would trade in order to acquire which tier. So I will bring that up as we go along.
Absolutely. And any kind of trade theoreticals you want to bring up as we go, take us right off course in terms of what we're doing. That's a great rabbit hole. Let's start it off here. You're the guest. Who's your number 10 tight end in this draft?
Number 10, I think he might be a little lower for me than some others, but it would be Terrence Ferguson out of Oregon, 6'5", 247. He's kind of a linear athlete. That was my number one knock against him. I felt that he just didn't have great change of direction, and he lacked the agility sometimes, even in blocking situations, to get the lead blocker. Just he's not able to turn well. You know, he just, like, he's a very straight athlete. When he is going straight, though, he's fast and very athletic. He can shake DBs at that point. But I just felt like he wasn't the best blocker. He can be countered due to his telegraphing, and he can be a little lungy. And he feels like a project to me. And it feels like I wouldn't love getting this guy to replace Kohler, but I could live with it. That's where I stand with him.
All right. Fair enough. Ferguson is actually number 4 on my list. So we got a big difference. And it's great. We have some differences. This is great. So you're going to get another side of the story here. He's 6'5", 247, a 4.63 40, which is very fast, has long arms at 32 7/8. That's long for a tight end. Mm-hmm. It's oftentimes guys are in the 31s at the tight end group. Very rarely they get up to offensive tackle length of like 34 inches. He's one of the best athletes in the position group in terms of 40, in terms of jumps, which is obviously very important for cuts for a tight end. His receiving metrics, he had the best yak per reception of any of the draftable tight ends at 9.0. So it makes things happen after the catch. A lot of that's by power, but some of it's speed. 9.1 yards per target overall, 8.4 career. His A dot was 7.8. So it's not like he's taking a lot of passes way down the field and getting a lot of yak on that. That's a relatively short A dot. The passer rating throwing to him was 110.5 last year, 122.7 career. Those numbers are both very good for the tight end group. There's actually a wide variation in the tight end passer ratings, and a lot of it is, I will completely admit, quarterback driven. That if you had the good fortune to play with Cam Ward as Arroyo did, then you look pretty damn good in those statistics. If you didn't, you played with the Michigan losers this last year, you don't look very good. And that's, you know, just it's a fact of life, and you've got to factor that context in. The other figure I'm going to give you for every tight end is missed tackles forced per reception. And Ferguson was at 0.12. And despite being a bigger real dog, that's not a great number. It's probably a little bit below average, just a tad below average. There are certainly players who are a lot better. His 0.16 career is better, and that would probably be just a tad above average, maybe about 0.14, I would guess, is about the right midpoint for that, about the right midpoint for tight ends. Ferguson needs a fair amount of additional functional strength, in my opinion. He's not a fully bulked up athlete. And that's something that the Ravens can give him time to do in a year. If they draft him and they have two of these three tight ends left on the roster, they can certainly find ways to use him, still get him snaps, get him a lot of special teams experience and whatnot, and have him get that year in the NFL weight room that we always talk about almost with any blocking position. As a receiver, I'll tell you, the MTF numbers to me, when I looked at the JTT tape for this, by the way, highly recommend this, adjust the tape, JTT. If you look for that tape, it has every target for certain players, every touch, in fact, and every penalty, by the way, too, which is fantastic, especially the penalties, because otherwise you don't have a real way to know exactly what those flags were or how they occurred or whatnot. But I highly recommend it. And You get to look at about 10 or 15 of them maybe, and then you have to start paying a $2.50 monthly charge, but it's well worth it. Anyway, that's how I did a lot of the scouting on this group here. And I think it's outstanding stuff. He did have very impressive yards after contact that I saw, several resulting in touchdowns when he got tackled anywhere near the goal line. It's like, he wasn't giving up. In that pin particular, there was an absurd, don't know if people have ever seen the episode of the Flintstones where Fred goes back to college and plays football, and he's immediately the best football player on the team, and everybody else is really small compared to him, which is interesting that he would be like an athlete or something like that again. But anyway, he, at one point, he's carrying the entire opposing team along with him. And that's what it looked like, you know, on one play that Ferguson did versus Washington State in 2023. So he's dragging literally like this. There's a group of about six guys around him, and none of his guys pushing the pile like you normally see. He's just dragging these guys, and they cannot get him to the ground. It's the weirdest kind of a situation you see. He does have some ankle breaking stuff. If you look at the Oregon State game, really nice ankle breaking move on the left sideline. He's got a stiff arm that I like. He showed that up for Ohio State. Really good box out skills at the catch point. So a little bit of disappearing act in him. Jackie Smith was known for this. If you look at it, Ravens of the past, Daniel Wilcox caught the first ever touchdown from Steve McNair in 2006 for the Ravens. If you ever go back and look at that game, Daniel Wilcox had like a kind of a fake block, this get low disappearing act, showed up in the end zone. All of a sudden he's wide open for McNair. I love to see that on kind of a fake block and go pattern. A lot of his stuff is mid-range routes, screens, level zero play action, and outlets. There are a lot of bread and butter that's fairly close to the line of scrimmage. That's dragging down that A dot that I told you about earlier. But I think for the Ravens, the problem with Ferguson is the problem we're going to talk about all night, or we're going to not talk about all night. We're going to you know, mention it once and hopefully be done with it, is that with all the other tight ends on the roster, they have to make a move before they can draft a player like him. So even in terms of the order of where they are in the draft, they have to consider how they're going to make that tight end selection after that point, or at that point that they make a trade. So it could be, honestly, they might be able to trade up in round one to significant advantage if they're willing to trade Andrews, say, just a few spots to get a player they really want. And one such deal was tossed out there by Bill Barnwell, I thought actually was fairly reasonable from the Ravens' perspective. But other than that, I like Ferguson. I had him higher than you did. I like some of his receiving skills, and I think his after the catch play is better than the PFF missed tackle number is representing.
Yeah. And actually now that I look at it, I would have him at least one spot higher. But yeah, I 100% understand why. And I felt as though I would honestly say until tight end six, like my 7 through 10, pretty fungible about my order. They're all pretty close. So I definitely could see him moving him up higher. I wouldn't say it's totally damning of him. If he was around in the fifth round, I think that could be a selection. But again, like you said, even like fourth round would be a par for me, and fifth round would be value. I think that if you could do a trade there, then that would make sense to me. But yeah,
again, they'd have to do a trade, but I think I would be okay at number 91. And that's the last pick, the only pick the Ravens have in the third round. It's again, that's probably par and not value. Early fourth round pick would I think be value. You're saying fifth round is value, and I understand. We just have a difference of opinion on the
player. I think it's one of those things too where I don't have a good gauge of what the tight end market will be like in this draft. They could go higher. I think these tight ends are better for what it's worth, right? Than maybe that draft grade, but I don't know. I would have to look at the historical averages of like how many tight ends are drafted. But that's why I was thinking like maybe this like level of tight end, you know, like tight end 8 or so is usually drafted in the fourth or fifth round, but maybe I'm wrong.
One of the things I think is true, and maybe this is kind of what you're alluding to here, is that there's a very, I think, a unlike most years, certainly unlike last year, there's a very gradual grade off of tight end talent such that, and you mentioned in talking about all your guys from 7 to 10 and maybe even you might go to 14 with that, are all pretty similar. I think there are a lot of teams this year looking at this tight end class and say, there's going to be some UDFA tight ends that I'm going to be perfectly willing to have. And yeah. and they're going to be some of the guys towards the bottom of the 18 guys I looked at. I think they'll be guys that other teams are excited to get as a UDFA, maybe as a seven. And I would be interested to hear that, though, how many tight ends were drafted last year. Maybe there's a way to go into that and sort by position within.
The Wikipedia PFR. Is really good. Usually I'll do it.
Okay. All right.
But go ahead. Who's your number 10? I'm curious.
Yeah, my number 10 guy is Jackson Hawes. So let me get down on my notes on him here. Yeah, you got him in there somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, I definitely do.
Georgia Tech wears number 85 if you're looking at the tape. I'm 6'4", 253. Not a fast guy. 4'80", 240, 32 and an eighth inch arms. I don't have an age on him, but he played 3 years at Yale. So 3 years of his records you pretty much have to throw away. And then 1 year at Georgia Tech. His jumps are a plus, but all his other combine testing is well below average. So explosive coming out of his stance, but otherwise has issues. In terms of receiving metrics, his ADOT was the lowest of any of the draftable tight ends at 4.3 this last year. Otherwise, he had a very good yards per target overall at 9.8. So that'll tell you he needs to get some yak, and he did at 8.2 yak per play. The passer rating throwing to him was 107.3, 103.2 career. That's just fine. And his missed tackles force were a plus, 0.19 this last year. So that means he has 19 missed tackles forced per 100 receptions. Okay, that's the way to think about 0.19 and 0.20 career. He's one of the best blocking tight ends in this class. He's one of the only guys that really combines the ability to have inline play and block well, pass or run, versus the ability, along with the ability to line up targets well in level 2 and 3. And that's something we've seen well from Isaiah Likely last year in particular. Just talking about him always getting into level 2, getting a chance against a safety or a corner in particular, sometimes a linebacker, and forklifting the guy. It's like an unfair disadvantage. Likely keeps his feet exceptionally well. He moves the guy completely off the spot. And I think Hawes could be that kind of player too. He also has the size to be the Rickard Boyle motion inside guy. So if the Ravens want to go back to combination blocks and include the tight end, he's a guy who can motion to the inside. And we saw the Ravens, frankly, waste a lot of their motion doing that during the Roman years. They weren't using their motion to do other things like identify the defense or to create a receiving release like a lot of teams do. But it is another option, and you can certainly do either. What else to say about this? I think the only other question about Hawes is just how do the Ravens get space to draft him? So they have the good news about him is I think he'll be a sixth or seventh round pick, probably might be drafted in the fifth round, but the Ravens have pretty much all of day one and two and about half of day three to decide if they can trade a tight end or get to the point of frustration for other teams where they haven't gotten a tight end and they want one of the Ravens guys.
Correct. Jackson Hawes for me was number 8. Mm-hmm. He is the guy that I would have like basically starred as the target for the Ravens. Not because there's plenty of other tight ends I like better, but what I like about him is that you can draft him and not even worry about him competing for like wide receiver snaps. You know, he's just a phenomenal six lineman, in my opinion. Like obviously you can't line him up inside, but on the edge, oh my gosh, like in line, he's the best blocker I've ever seen at tight end and at the college level. I mean, like I said, we've been doing this together for 4 years. He is above and beyond as a blocker. He's pro ready. And I'm really impressed with him from that perspective. Big, long frame, good enough pass catcher, in my opinion. He did have 11% drop rate, which is not great. But the sample size is incredibly small. They don't throw to him often. So I think you're right, though. He could be drafted in a later round than guys I had ranked behind him. But from a Ravens fit perspective, that's why I had him a little bit higher. I love him. And honestly, if we weren't so committed to Rickard, and we aren't, frankly, after this year, I could even see not carrying a fullback and using him more.
Perhaps, yeah. He had a lot of pass blocking snaps. It's not quite the highest in this class. But
if you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, about takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
It's more challenging than ever to meet the demands of competing priorities that work throws our way. From emails to reports and project proposals, we need help to get it all done. Grammarly is the essential AI communication assistant that boosts your productivity at work so you can get more of what you need done faster, no matter what or where you're writing. Grammarly sets the standard for responsible AI and equips you with the best tools to do your job. Like AI-powered features that help you write and edit quickly everywhere you write, or tone features that help you communicate more confidently. Just a few clicks can tailor your tone and writing so you come across exactly as you intend. No wonder 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Let Grammarly take the busy work off your plate so you can focus on high-impact work. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Well, I'll be. A hitchhiker in an Easter Bunny costume. Hop in. Where are you headed?
BJ's Wholesale Club to do my Easter shopping. I have so many baskets to fill.
That costume is so lifelike. There's not even a zipper.
Oh, there's BJ's. I can hop out here.
Look at him go.
Get a $15 digital coupon when you spend $150 on practically anything in one transaction through April 20th. Coupon will appear in your digital gallery on April 24th. Terms apply. Go to bjs.com/Easter coupon for details. BJ's, absurdly simple savings.
That is one of the really things that I look for, and he certainly was if he wasn't the very best pass blocker in the class, he might have been second. And there's one other guy I'm thinking of who is good as a run blocker and a pass blocker, but Hawes is really the Nick Boyle type of this class.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Go to your number 9 guy,
Gunnar Helm out of Texas, 6'05", 241, 32 and 7 and 3/4 arm length. Bad 40 time, but he got hurt, so he was playing. He ran it hurt. At the combine. So I definitely think he's faster than that if you look at the film. He does play with aggression. I think his route pacing isn't that great. So he's not fooling DBs. He does look for contact. He usually falls forward. I think finishes blocks well, seals the edge, has good feet. And he won't wow you with any athleticism, I think is the biggest thing I'll say with him. He just it's kind of like a standard built tight end. You know, he just, mm-hmm. he does all the tight end things. He's not particularly exceptional. And I think the big thing I would say about Helm, is you would not be drafting him to be any more than your third, maybe your second, if he develops well, tight end.
Okay. All right. Helm is one of the most difficult guys for me to place in my order from top to bottom. Definitely one of the most difficult. Where did I end up with him anyway? It's probably the place to start here. Yeah, I have him at number six overall. I almost felt like I went too low there. And I'll give you his pluses, and then there's a lot of minuses that show up on tape. So first of all, he's a kind of a subpar athlete in terms of testing, so we'll get that out of there. The biggest plus, his passer rating throwing to him is 137.8 this last year, 134.3 career. Does not allow a lot of opposing interceptions. And there are tight ends with big problems with that in this draft. So 137.8 is almost what Lamar Jackson has been throwing his tight ends the last 2 years. So he's had pretty good quarterbacks in the combination of Ewers and this year Manning with Texas, who have been throwing him the football. So that's certainly helped. But he's also got a tremendous catch radius himself, which I think has helped knock down some balls. He can reach back for the ball and catch it one-handed. So that's a much bigger effective catch radius than a lot of other tight ends have. And that's one of the things that really shows up on tape. 10.8 yards per target overall. That's also his career number. Forces a lot of missed tackles, 0.20 per play. So that was one of the higher ones. He's probably third or fourth in this tight end group. Not quite the highest, but certainly not the above average. What to say about this? He dropped two balls and 73 targets. So the drops were not really an issue. But I'll think you get then into the weak parts of his game, and let's get right to it. You watch the Texas game in the college football playoffs at either one, the Arizona State or the Ohio State game, and you'll see a player who really struggles to block, pass, or run. And it's just there's a balance issue. There's a standing up too straight issue. There's so many things that kind of clearly indicate, for some other things I'm going to get to, that he never really learned how to do it or didn't think it was his responsibility. And it could be either of these things based on the rest of the things I'm going to tell you. Okay. In terms of penalties, he racked up 7 penalties on the year. 3 of them were holding calls. Mississippi State, that was a corner, a defensive end versus Oklahoma, defensive end versus Vandy. He had an IDP versus Kentucky, which is a formation issue. And I couldn't really tell if it was his mistake or another guy on the line of scrimmage that covered him, made him ineligible, and then he moved downfield. But probably was not his problem. Nonetheless, that's 4 fouls that were serious, declinable fouls that really influence your offense and the probability of stalling drives. Some of the other things I noticed from his film, he had a very solid U-turn move for Yak that I thought was good. So that's when you're coming back to the quarterback, you make the guy miss who's chasing you in that direction, the U-turn, and you beat him. And if there's not a lot of other traffic in the area, it usually results in some significant additional Yak. The receivers that I associate that with normally are faster receivers like Marquise Brown or Zay Flowers. Both have good U-turn moves. Those are guys who I normally associate that with, and not a big tight end like this. But he did a good job with it. Frequently hurdles. That's a positive college impact. I think it could be a big NFL risk, both for turnovers and for injury risk. I'm not a fan of the hurdle in general. He's tried the stiff arm and he has really limited impact with it. And I think I know what the problem is, and this might be fixable once he gets playing with Derrick Henry, if that ever happens, but he uses a stationary thing. It's like he's trying to use the front of the ship to block his, to line it up directly with the helmet of the opponent. And that's not going to work very often. The opponent has to almost be complicit when that occurs. It's when Derrick Henry, the reason his stiff arm is so effective is it's a clubbing motion to throw that player aside. And he doesn't really do that. And that's where I think the problem is with him not having good stiff arm. He should, he's got the good length to have a stiff arm. And, the one time he finally threw one, and now we're getting into some of the other problems with Gunnar Helm, where he can't get it out of his own way. He threw his first really good stiff arm of the year. It's about his third he tried that I noticed versus Ohio State. Pushed the defensive back out of bounds and immediately points at him and gets a taunting foul.
Oh no.
So I said, yeah, that's the guy you want on your team. So got some growing up to do. Probably in terms of what responsibilities really belong to him as a tight end and his own on-field comportment. He could have had two drops versus Georgia in the SEC title game. I don't know if you folks remember it. If you watched the game, you probably do, but he was the guy's wide open on the right sideline, was just barely overthrown. And a lot of the blame went to the quarterback on that play, but Helm is a tall guy and he could have gone up and got the ball. And then in college, you only need to get 1 foot in. And it definitely could have been a ball that was caught. Didn't get called a drop. And there was another one later in the game that occurred. Lots to clean up in terms of his blocking, but I love his pure receiving talents. I think there are a lot of teams are going to be in love with his size, his catch radius, and they think they can fix his problems with blocking, penalties, and on-field comportment. But I think for the Ravens, first of all, it's a lot of things to get by in terms of not liking the guy. But it's also by him not being the blocker that they normally expect a tight end to be, I think they're going to be frustrated by that. So pile on the fact that they have to trade someone to be able to pick Gunnar Helm. I think it becomes a kind of a difficult situation. But glad you had him on your list. I did too. And let's just say again, I had him at number 6 and you had him at number 9, right?
That's right.
Okay. So do I go ahead with my number 9 guy then, right?
Sounds right. Yep.
Let me get down to him. That's Mitchell Evans of Notre Dame, a player we get to see a fair amount because that's where Maureen went to school. I'll tell you my round evaluation later, but 6'5", 258, a 470, 440, which is okay for a tight end. It's not real slow. It's certainly not fast. 31 7 ancient charms. He'll be 22 in March. Most of his testing is below average. His receiving metrics, there isn't one metric where he's the best or the worst at. But his yards per target were not good at 7.1 this last year. And his yak is a major contributor to that at 4.4 yak per play, was one of the lower ones. They don't throw him a lot of long passes, 6.7 ADOT. And he did have only a decent missed tackle forced per reception rate of 0.15, 0.19 career. So there's maybe a little bit more there. You always worry about sample size because the reception total is fairly low and you can get multiple missed tackles on the same play when you're working through that. Gets lots of short passes thrown to him, caught with minimal yak. It's not a good combination to have catch passes at the line of scrimmage or even behind and then have a low yak number. You really want a Ray Rice kind of receiver that's going to get you a lot of yak if you're consistently throwing behind the line of scrimmage to him. And in the case of a tight end, it's usually a different skill set, but they're able to make people miss or make people slip off that first tackle. I think his home in the NFL is in what he brings in the blocking game as a Charlie Kolar, Nick Boyle inline guy, who comfortable contributing on combination blocks. If you were with the Ravens, I think, you know, he'd line up on the right side a lot and then be responsible for the first block or chip on an edge rusher from that side, as it was played out for the 2024 Ravens with all the help they gave to Roger Rosengarten. So that would be where I'd see him playing. And of course, a lot of special teams. Two longest plays of the year were 32 and 33 yards, respectively. They came in the semifinal and the final of the college football playoffs. So it's good to see him, you know, come up in a big time situation. Combination blocking receiving role, probably a little bit like Kohler. If you're going to, he'd be a reset guy for Kohler that I think might make sense if you were, you know, going to do it. But he's definitely Kohler at Iowa State was fed the ball, force fed the football as a big part of their offense. Mitchell, it's hasn't been that way at Notre Dame at all. So, you know, he would probably still be a fairly low target guy and it would not be that much of a change for him.
Right. For me, Mitchell Evans was 11, so I guess number 1 in my honorable mentions. Mm-hmm. I knew to make sure to scout him because of your Notre Dame familiarity. I think he's not the best mover. He's definitely, I think, a more of a reliable blocking tight end. He's a bigger and wider guy than some of the other 6'5", 250-ish pound guys mm-hmm. that all these tight ends are. Good hands through contact. I saw him clap attack the ball a couple times.
Try clap his hands together to make the catch.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's bad. You're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier to get disrupted by defenders. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, I thought he was fine in a lot of metrics. Like, and in this part of the draft, they all become a little samey, in my opinion, mm-hmm. when you watch them. And I would want to UDFA him personally.
UDFA, okay, and I have him as a 5 or a 6. So that's probably consistent, or maybe even more than I would expect the difference to be, given a 9 and 11. But that's okay.
So, by the way, I did look. It's usually like 12 to 13 drafted, mm-hmm. With a lot of them drafted in the fourth round. Fourth round's like a hot area for tight ends, which makes sense.
So if we got 18 guys here who I'd be excited about getting as UDFAs, at least, and I think most of them are probably going to be as good as the number 12 tight end from last year. That'd be my guess. Then we'd have to, I think this is a year where it'd be nice if the Ravens could have the ability to draft a tight end. But then it may also restrict the value that they can get for whoever they would trade from the tight end room. Is that, you know, hey, you want us to give you a lot of value when there's all these tight ends available in this draft? Why should we do that?
Yeah, I did. I did say when I was evaluating these guys, Bowers last year would have been number one. Mm-hmm. And then I think you would have had 1 through 6 before you hit Sinnott. But maybe, you know, he shuffles in the back end of those 6, just to give you a context of how much better this class is than last year's.
Yeah. All right, we're up to your number 8 guy, I think, unless you already had somebody.
That was Jackson Hawes.
Jackson Hawes. Okay, so my number 8 guy, Jake Brenningstuhl of Clemson. Looks like Brenningstuhl, probably should be, but Brenningstuhl is how he pronounces it. 6'6", 241, 475, 31.5-inch arms. Is nothing special. 23 in December. He's a little bit on the older side. He's got no standout testing, really short vertical leap. I would call him a somewhat awkward big man. But what I saw on tape as a receiver was a lot more impressive than his athleticism. And so he's one of those guys who really stands out there. His receiving metrics, he doesn't have anything that's a real standout. His yards per target are low at 7.3. His yak perception of 5.0 is a little low. His ADOT is a little low. But the passer rating throwing to him is 114.6. And you can kind of see some of that. Does not force a lot of missed tackles, 0.12 missed tackles per place. That's a little bit below average, as we mentioned, I think, earlier. He has one thing that Clemson had to do things to get him open. So they ran a lot of stacked and bunch formation. This is true of all tight ends. So it's not like this is a knock on Brenningstuhl, but there are a fair amount of play action plays where he made really good use of space in the seam and befuddlement of linebackers between level 2 and level 3, taking missteps. So the Clemson play action looked pretty good from that perspective in terms of getting him free. Stacked formations, though, definitely. If you saw, you know, what Clemson was doing with him there, it was often a 2x2 stack that they would run. And that's a play where you can really see Mahomes throwing a ball like that to Kelsey and just figuring out how to where the space is going to be soft for him to catch the football there. Some good disappearing skills near the line of scrimmage. I talked about them earlier in terms of what I mean by that. Lots of slants and short outs. And those really hold down both his ADOT and his yak. It's really hard to get turned upfield on a out route. If you got space, you can do it and you make the first guy miss. You can certainly get a significant amount of yak, but it definitely holds down your average yak you get on that play. Is nothing like catching a seam route and the potential for big plays. In the Wake game, there were two real standout plays that I liked. He had a screen pass where Wake had a diagnosed and still allowed him 10 yards somehow. And it's a play worth going back and looking at, because it's like, how the hell did he get 10 yards out of that? There's the players all around him. There's all this traffic, and he not only negotiates it and takes some steps that make people miss on him. He also runs through tackles on the play, and it's a great combo MTF play. And he also had a double pass where he got behind the defense for a TD. And that's another example of the scheming they did to get him space. So not a natural athlete who's going to separate a ton as a tight end. He has some box out ability, but that's about it. Think he's mostly a dragger in terms of the Yakko. That might be why his MTF total is a little low. It looks like his his yards after contact number might be better, and I didn't have that. But the MTF number specifically might be held down for the fact that he's dragged some tacklers. It reminds me a little bit of Travis Vokolek in some ways. Decent hands, disappointing ability after the catch. He does not bring as much as a run blocker as his size, length, and feet would tell you he really should be better there. So he's not really a great inline guy, and he did, for the most part, he was lining up on the outside. So anyway, another guy, they could pick him up late. If they picked him up in round six or round seven, they're immediately exposing him to a likely cut at the end of the camp, unless they would make a trade then and decide that he's their guy at tight end. But he would be another guy who would provide you insurance just in case someone would get hurt in camp.
Yeah, and that is a decent consideration to make.
Yeah,
is that having insurance would be good. I mean, we do have Kadir, who might be a possibility there on the practice squad. The Ravens, I felt like, pissed away a lot of their picks last year at the back half of the draft, picking a bunch of guys to plug in holes rather than maybe a best player available. They could have just UDFA'd to plug those holes. So, you know, maybe they will draft a tight end at the end of their 11 picks and say, you know, he's an insurance policy and we'll try to hide him on the practice squad otherwise. For me, Brenningstuhl was number 7, so very comparable. High motor, definitely always wanted to finish a play. Big slot guy, very difficult evaluation when it came to blocking just because of how they played him. More as a wide receiver, frankly, than a tight end. Can lose the ball. Had some concentration drops, but otherwise flashed good hands, in my opinion. Had a couple, you know, really impressive catches. He has enough twitch to make defenders miss after the catch, in my opinion, but he doesn't have enough. It takes him too long to get the speed to really beat much more than a linebacker. I think safeties will be able to be on him quite well. For me, yeah, he's right at that tier break for me, so that I wouldn't be too thrilled about drafting him too high if we haven't already traded somebody, right? So that's where I would land with him. You're muted, Ken. Ken, you're muted. Sorry.
Brenningstuhl only had 70 career pass blocking snaps. So that first of all, it tells you two things. So number one, Clemson really wanted him to be part of the offense and go out down the field, and he's, you know, split in the formation or whatnot. If he doesn't line up in line, the option to be a pass blocker is it's not likely. You'd have to go in motion or something like that to make that a possibility. But the other part of this is kind of like evaluating Sam linebackers coming out of school. Is they're always good pass rushers who are among the best athletes and the players that their teams depend on. So they need them as pass rushers. They don't want them dropping to coverage. And you have to pick out those traits that you think are going to lead to guys who will be good pass defenders at the next level. And it's a little bit hard to do. But Brenningstuhl, you know, he certainly, year in NFL weight room, like we always say, oh, like that cures everything. But some better coaching, frankly, you know, getting his technique in a better place might make him a decent blocker as well.
His frame could carry more weight for sure.
Yeah. All right. So I think you're up next, right?
My number 7 was Jake. So I guess we go to yours.
Okay. So yeah, my number 7, you may have this guy higher because I'm sure he's on your list, is Harold Fannin. Now, Fannin is an interesting case because he went to Bowling Green. And so his context is everything. 6'3", 241, 471 in the 40. That's okay. It's not super fast. It's not super slow. 32 1/4-inch arms. Has outstanding 3-cone and jumps. But he's small for an NFL tight end. He's also very young for an NFL tight end. He won't be 21 until July. So that might be the youngest tight end among the draftables in this group. There are a couple of guys I didn't have ages on, but most of them played 4 or 5 years in college. So, you know, they're clearly older than that. Receiving metrics, 10.4 yards per target at Bowling Green. And he had a 1,500-yard season, by the way. He was fed the football consistently. He's by far Bowling Green's most outstanding athlete. And in fact, he was a consensus All-American despite playing in the MAC. So that's very impressive on its own. And he is the first tight end in to be his conference's MVP in FBS history. So wow. The FBS hasn't been around forever, but there's a lot of conferences, and he is the very first tight end ever to win his conference MVP. So he had an amazing statistical season from a lot of ways. 10.4 yards per target. His yak per reception was at 7.5, which is very good. A dot of 7.5, not particularly long. Passer rating throwing to him was 123.8. Oftentimes, when you have a guy who racks up a ton of targets, they'll have a bunch of marginal targets as the bailout guy that will reduce the value of that. Not really in his case. And his missed tackles force per reception, and I would expect this to be high given the context, 0.29, which still was not the highest, amazingly, but might have been second highest in the entire tight end group. And that's also his career rate. What else do I have to say about him? He had 8 separate 100-yard games, including 213 against Arkansas State, when he had a ho-hum 22 targets. I believe he caught 17 balls that game. That was in the 68 Ventures Bowl and a 38-31 loss. By the way, I can't keep the bowls at all straight, but the cooler the name, the more likely I am to remember it. And so one of the guys in one of the other position groups, I don't even remember now, had a big game in the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
I've watched that one before.
Cool.
Oh, man.
He looks small on the field, even versus the Mac players. Now, he looks big relative to Mac players, but then everybody on the Mac team looks like a dwarf almost a lot of the time. They're very few imposing 6'4 and 6'5 athletes, and he's short even relative to them. For the Ravens, another player that is certain to be drafted. The Ravens can't have a catch and release on Fannin where they draft him with a 4th round pick or something and then they have to cut him at the end of camp. It doesn't make any sense. So they'd have to have a plan for drafting him, and it would have to involve getting rid of a player.
Agreed. Yeah, he's definitely too good to hide on the practice squad. He was my number 3, and the likely comps are everywhere. Small school, smaller build, but really interesting story. 0-star recruit, and obviously playing at the smaller school, absolutely dominates. Everyone knows that he's getting the ball, and they can't do anything about it. Similar measurables to Laporta. If you look at it, has a better acceleration than top speed, but it's an elite acceleration, able to get that separation from it. He wins at all 3 levels, in my opinion. Good enough blocking reps, all things considered, for his size. This is the classic case of the NFL weight room, in my opinion, because you're coming from a program like Bowling Green and then going to the NFL. I imagine there's a bigger gap than if you're coming from Michigan. So excited to see where his career goes. Definitely a guy I'll keep my eye on. I'm really excited about him just in general. I always like to have a guy that I'm rooting for, and I feel like of this class, he's the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, he definitely has tremendous upside in terms of, particularly in terms of that age. And
exactly, and too. He is significantly younger. There's a lot of 23-year-olds in this list. Not him.
We don't have a BYU tight end on this list, because oftentimes those BYU guys have already been on a mission or something, and they, they're 27 and they've already got
they might have gray hair.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. So Fannin was my number 7 guy. He's higher on your list.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've already done your number 7 guy. So I think we'll cut off the first show here. We'll come back and count down the top 6, where I think we're going to have a lot of similar players here, or we've already named them. This is an interesting group. I'm sure we'll talk more, but Alec, a pleasure to talk football with you as always. It is. Tell folks where they can talk with you online.
Sure. I mostly hang out on Discord these days. If you want to join the defunct One Winning Pod Discord that still is lively otherwise, you can reach out to me and we can add you. Otherwise, yeah, you can find me online, A. Pulianis. And that's about it.
And you're going to be traveling this year when we're doing the draft. So that's unfortunate.
No. I travel. I leave after the draft is concluded. I will be around for nights 1 and 2 and basically around for day three, but eventually getting to the airport. Yeah.
All right. Well, very good. You guys have fun. Other folks out there, wanted to plug coming for the NFL Draft Watch Party. It is one of the really great events of the year. One of the things I really look forward to, engaging directly with people who've supported the pod so well for the whole year. To give you an idea of format, if you're here now, you may have already seen it because you're obviously you're listening to draft podcast material here. But there's 3 to 4 to 6 panelists sometimes who are talking about the picks as they're going along, all enjoying the organic experience together in a non-pick tipping environment. I want to remind people multiple times not to tip picks this year again. But we watch the same feed in order to make that happen. Then we get to appreciate each other's reaction to this pick as part of the fun. And we also are working on a spreadsheet together where we kind of pick out who the most likely players are and how each pick as they come off the board impacts the Baltimore Ravens and their ability to make a pick. So that's how we do it. It's a very fun way. The draft can be a long wait between picks, but this makes it a lot of fun in terms of the players and the people who are panelists, and as well as the people who are in the stream tend to be extremely knowledgeable about the selection. So really appreciate that, what all of you guys have brought to it. And it's provided some nice content that has some legs to it after the draft that people still like listening to months later sometimes. Anyway, Alec, really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.